Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're listening to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and we're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen every Monday at noon on heritageradionetwork.com or download the podcast on iTunes. Today, I'm speaking with Owen Ruck, General Manager of Textile Arts Center in both Brooklyn and Manhattan. If you're familiar with my blog, Design Sponge, at all, you may have picked up on the fact that I am a fabric obsessor. I love it in all forms, from creation and raw materials to the final products. So the Textile Arts Center is something that I've been really interested in since I heard about it, I think in 2009 when it opened. So Owen is the General Manager, and I'm very excited to speak with her today. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, for those people who aren't familiar with the center, why don't you back us up a little bit and tell us about it? I know you've got two separate spaces, a huge one in Brooklyn and a smaller storefront in Manhattan.
Yeah, so we started in June of 2009. We were in a very small space in Park Slope, and we stayed there for about 9 months before we knew we wanted to expand. So we only had weaving at that point, and then we knew if you had the space for screen printing and weaving, then you basically could have everything else as long as you have the equipment. So we looked around for not very long. We happened upon the space that's on Carroll Street between 3rd and 4th Avenue, and it's beautiful. So we just fell in love immediately and had to have it. So that was the first space. We got all the equipment in there, set up the screen printing, sewing. We have machine knitting now, a full dye lab that does natural and synthetic dyeing. And then last summer, we figured, well, there must be millions of people that we're not reaching across the water that don't want to come all the way over to Brooklyn necessarily. We knew, obviously, very clearly that Brooklyn has a thriving art scene and do-it-yourself scene. Etsy is here. Third Ward is here. So that made a lot of sense to us, but making the leap to Manhattan was definitely going to be a risk, but we were willing to take it and see who else we could reach by doing that. So that was last summer's project.
That's a pretty good one. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you went to Manhattan. I think it's nice to have options for both if you can do that. Yeah. I'm going to ask you about the difference between the people who take classes there later. But I want to know, whose idea was it to start something? Like, I mean, it's a big undertaking to start something because the equipment and the supplies are quite expensive for fiber art.
Yeah. I am one of the co-founders as well with a woman named Vishna Popovich, who is a very dear friend of mine. But we met right before we started. She was teaching weaving to kids, and I was volunteering my time in exchange for loom. I was in interior design before, so I didn't like it very much, and I was looking for things outside of work to do. I was missed the environment of a studio. You know, generally textile studios have such a feeling of camaraderie and community. You need to bounce ideas off of one another, and what kind of techniques are you using, things like that. So I really missed that, and I was looking for that again, and so was she. And that's, she had just finished her master's in art education at Pratt after finishing RISD for textile design. So we met there, and she happened to have the money. She was a sole investor for the whole thing, and we just really hit it off and had a lot of fun together and thought, you know, this doesn't have to be only for weaving. It doesn't have to be only for any one thing. There's no place in New York City that really is a hub for all those who love textiles in any way, shape, or form, whether you're a designer or you do it professionally. It's just a hobby. It doesn't matter. But, you know, aside from going to continued ed classes at FIT or Parsons or Pratt, you don't have that kind of community to go to and use equipment.
Yeah. For, and so, as great as those classes are, they can be incredibly cost prohibitive. Yes. I have a lot of friends that are pattern designers who've been trying to take classes at schools like that for a while. And if you're just starting out, it's really difficult to find a place to not only learn, but I know you guys offer consulting services, which I love as something to give, because it's something that's really great sort of incubator to get things going and get some feedback from people who have more experience with that.
Yeah, and that's been something that kind of came about organically. It wasn't in the beginning, you know, solely we were thinking about education. This is something, these are handcrafts that we want to preserve, not only to supply a community for people who love these things, but let's keep this conversation going, and let's, you know, have the young generation know what they're talking about when it comes, you know, they've never seen a loom before, and that's crazy, you know. But at the same time, we'd see that even designers who went to school for woven designs, they had never touched a loom. That was that was insane to us. So, you know, being able to have people come in from bigger companies or independent designers, anything like that, and be able to bring those that information back to the workplace was really thrilling. So
I'm glad you guys are doing that. I think there's definitely, there seems to be sort of a really quickly growing interest in textiles right now and design, not just from people who are writing about it, but people who are making things. Yeah. Even just sort of like home crafters, I'm starting to get a lot more emails from people about like, how do I make patterns? How do I dye things? How do I make my own dyes? Right. And so I feel like there's this swell happening. Why do you think that fiber art in general is sort of having yet another rebirth right now?
It's a good question. I mean, I think it goes hand in hand with a lot of things going on. There's obviously, you know, Etsy came about when, you know, they've been around for a decade now, but, you know, it quickly became very, very mainstream. Same thing with Third Ward. So there's an educational side of things that people are really interested in doing things themselves rather than relying on mass production or something that feels very above them. There's no reason that we can't make our own clothes and fix our own clothes and tailor our own clothes, things like that, or make a new pillow for your couch when you want to. So I think that there's a desire for that, which goes along with a realization that we are forgetting about these handcrafts, that our mothers, even, you know, one generation above us, knew how to sew in school. That's where they learned it. And I'm not saying that we have to bring home ec back. That's not necessarily
it. I would
totally
love to take a home ec.
I would have loved it
days.
Too.
I would have been all over it.
I think it would have been awesome, but we didn't have that. And, you know, more and more budgets are getting cut from schools and arts and music programs are first to go. And so it's pretty sad that we don't have any access to that at a very young age. And so I think people realize that there is something there's something missing, along with all the technology coming in. You want to go back to being able to do those things yourself. But it's that much more rewarding to see that you could just go take a class. And then even if you knew how to knit, let's say, if you just take one class, you might have the basics of dyeing, and then you can take it that one step further that actually puts you in a better place than a giant company like Calvin Klein, which a lot of their designers don't even know how a lot of these processes happen. So just having that basic understanding really starts to change the consciousness of our society and, you know, how we treat objects and materials and things like that. So I think there is something starting to change that.
There's the tactile nature of textiles is such a huge part of that. I know it's a big draw for me and a lot of my friends that kind of collect fabrics like crazy people. And I think that's the thing. It's like, I mean, as much as I love all of the other sort of old world crafts that are being taught right now, there's something about fabric that really goes back to watching how the actual, like watching how yarn is made, where it comes from. And I used to do a lot of work with SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design, and they have a great program where they take the kids over to France and they sort of show them where it starts, like with a sheep.
Yep.
And so it sounds, I remember hearing about that class thinking it sounded crazy, but then thinking those kids are going to come out with such an understanding of the base material, how it's there, what it costs in terms of environmental impact. And those aren't things I think that are necessarily taught quite as much in like product design classes in schools.
They aren't at all. And it's totally overlooked. I mean, in a lot of schools, even, you know, at Parsons and things, we get a lot of feedback from students saying that this is something missing from their curriculum. And I think it's starting to get in there. You know, the Parsons, FIT, Pratt, they're all starting to include sustainable design programs, which is great. And I know for a fact, I speak to a lot of the professors and instructors there, that they're wanting this information about, you know, teaching from the very basics of fiber to all the different processes, which is fantastic. But I think there are a lot of steps to go before that reaches a higher, you know, it's this generation that's getting that at the school level, that it will trickle up to, you know, being maybe hopefully in a mass production setting where there's a larger understanding of all of it.
What percentage of your class takers in general do you think are kids that are actually currently in school?
A pretty good amount. I would say probably between 20% and 30%.
That's great.
Yeah, it's good, especially, you know, now with the Manhattans. We're right by NYU. We're right by Parsons. So that is really helpful when it comes to that. But they do, you know, kids from RISD come down, especially during the summer months. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of them are interns too.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't have the money. So we do an internship program where they have an exchange for classes for free, and they'll be involved in very specific projects and really learn something about what's going on with the companies. So.
You guys have done a lot of great work with visiting artists. And one of the things that I know is really important for you guys, and I think is very impressive for me as an outsider, is the residency program that you do. Could you talk a little bit about how that got started?
Yeah, we started that We're halfway through our second year right now, and we're about to move in September to our fourth group of artists. So we house six artists, not house in the sense of have them there. They don't live there.
They sleep in the bed, surrounded by little balls of yarn. They turn into pillows.
We have six of them there, which they have 24/7 access to the space. They have access to our facilities, but they're in a separate space than ours. So we have the downstairs space on Carroll Street, which is about 3,200 square feet, and then upstairs we have another 2,000 square feet or so that has six separate individual studios, but also communal working space. There's a library, there's another additional classroom, and we work with a woman named Jordana Martin for that program. We partnered with her to develop it, and she's essentially their mentor there. She has her own studio space in there as well, so she's there all the time with them, and we work together to develop, you know, who are the guest critics that are going to come in and talk to them each week. And one thing that we're changing for the fall program is that it's going to, instead of 6 months, they're here for 9 months. So it's really going to work more like a school schedule. Mm-hmm. Having that additional 3 months means you get that much more in depth. You know, 6 months just felt so, as soon as you get in that door, you better get started. Yeah. You know, you have a little bit of time to play around, and then suddenly you're like, oh, I'm supposed to be thinking about the group show at the end, or what am I going to present? But that's way too quick. So adding 3 months will really change that, I think, and it'll allow us a little bit more to develop the actual curriculum of what we're bringing to them. So we see this as perfect for, you know, people who are in an interim period, you know, whether mm-hmm. you're between degrees, or you want to change your career path, or you're just in a place of wanting to move to the city and need something, a community to rely on. And so that's majority of who we're serving with this program. And so it's been great. I mean, we've had three great semesters, I guess I'll call them, cycles of people. And we know at this point that we're, you know, we've developed something that we're really proud of. And so now we're starting to do the outreach for, we're doing the fundraising outreach for sponsors for the program, so that seats are fully funded, at least partially funded, mm-hmm. Because artists and designers deserve to have a great place to work, and, you know, deserve to have the educational component of as well. There are plenty of residencies out there, and the definition for each place changes drastically. Yes. But for us, this really does mean a residency. You're mm-hmm. part of this community, and, you know, we'll be offering work study, and so that you're actually interacting with the rest of Textile Arts Center. It's not just you and your studio upstairs.
So that's fantastic. So for people listening who maybe are interested in applying or mm-hmm. being a part of that, how does that process work? Do they apply? Do you guys pick?
We just closed the interview period. We're in the midst of that now. But we will open it up again now that it's a much longer period, and we are seeking out the funds and everything. We know that, you know, we want international people to come, and we want people to have the time to get their visa information in order and all of that. Or if they want to move from California, we invite you to, you know, but we know that requires time. So we're going to be opening it up again in probably October.
That's great.
And then we'll start the interview process in early spring of next year.
That's good. People have plenty of time to work on portfolios and get their work done. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to ask you some more about the contemporary classes and artists that you're working with.
Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market. Whether you are cooking for one or for a crowd, Fairway Market literally has everything you need for a fantastic meal. But if you don't feel like cooking, no worries. They cater. Check out fairwaymarket.com for more information. And be sure to check the new blog, On Our Plate, for weekly specials, health tips, and recipes.
Welcome back. You're listening to After the Jump on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today I'm speaking with Owen Ruck, General Manager and co-founder of the Textile Arts Center. Before the break, we were talking about sort of the beginnings of the center, and I want to back it up even further a little bit and talk about sort of how you got involved in fibers and textile art in general. I think it's something that a lot of younger people don't really go into a lot these days. And I think one of the reasons is it's not taught that often. So how did you come into this world?
My mom taught me to knit when I was like 7, and I've been sewing since I was 13, but that was always about, you know, I'm really small, so I had to tailor my clothes and nothing would ever fit me right. So that was a great skill to have, especially in high school. But I went to Skidmore College and I started as a psychology major, and quickly discovered that's not what I wanted to do. And I had taken a couple art classes and I had always been interested in art, so I switched my major. But I took a weaving class and I fell in love, and just realized, like, well, this is the medium I want to work with. The program at Skidmore is, we were taught it as a medium. It wasn't about textile design. It was just a medium to create fine art. So that was a great attitude to have, actually, for, you know, for the people who kind of fall back on this as a medium and just want to simply create. It just made us think a little bit more about, you know, contemporary art and how is it, you know, why textiles? Why are you using this? So that I really loved, and my fiber presser became my mentor.
That was great. I love hearing how those switches happen, whether it's from psychology to art or something like that. I think some people, your brain ends up sort of taking a little bit of that first thing and carrying it through to the next. Sure. And I'm glad you moved over to textiles.
Yes,
so I love that you mentioned contemporary work. One of the things I think that the Textile Art Center does so well is working with sort of really interesting independent contemporary artists. And I think fibers is one of the areas of art that can really quickly feel very grandma-ish. Mm-hmm. And I mean that in the bad way. Like, it can be a little old lady totally. Sometimes. And I think people hear, like, oh, textile classes are learning fundamentals. And they think about, like, thinking about, like, a grandma sitting around crocheting things, and it's not going to look cool. But you've worked with some fantastic artists. How have you sort of selected who you've worked with? And can you tell us a little bit about those particular classes?
We specifically, when we created the company and we brought, you know, both me and Vishna are young. When we started, she's now over 30, but I'm still under 30. But, you know, we knew that about textiles, and so we wanted to be able to get rid of that stigma and start to create a different culture around this, you know, a culture that was already happening and something that, you know, bridged the gap a little bit. There seemed to be a big gap between the women who were part of a feminist movement in the 70s and young women who are doing it now, and there didn't need to be a gap at all. So when we chose our branding, we tried to go for something neutral, something that was not gender specific, something that wasn't aesthetic specific, even though it's pretty clean, but, you know, giving the slate for anyone to feel welcome to come. But the artists that we work with, I mean, we do try and focus on things that are happening now. Mm-hmm. And things that are taking textiles as a medium in fine art in a new direction. Also working with designers, though, you know, and that's why, you know, in our residency program, for example, we try and choose 3 designers and 3 artists, have them working together, having a conversation about textiles and why textiles and what's important about using them, and how do we have that in the public eye more often, and how do you portray that to your audience, whether you're a fine artist who's trying to protect the fact that you're working with fiber as a medium, or you're a designer and you portray the fact that it's really important to know where your fibers came from and how they were made. So I think it's all part of the same conversation. But there are people like Sheila Hicks, for example, who is meeting her was, you know, the greatest day of my life kind of situation. But she is one of these women who was always fighting for textiles to, you know, she just chose it as a medium. She would never call herself a weaver. She wouldn't call herself a fiber artist. She is just an artist and happens to use fiber as a medium. So that is really inspiring. And I think that a lot of people can get behind that idea, and it's just becoming more and more popular. So that's been really fun to work with both artists and designers who are willing to have that conversation about textiles with one another and with their own audience.
That's great. Well, Sheila Hicks is amazing, but who are some other, for people who aren't as familiar with artists who are sort of working with textiles primarily, who are some contemporary textile artists that you're really in love with right now?
I love Megan Whitmarsh. She's fantastic. She's out on the West Coast, but she's come back and forth. She has a show up in New York now, I think it's still up, but she's just great. She's got a great attitude, and her aesthetic is spot on with what's going on right now in general in design, and, you know, with color and everything. So I really love her. But who else? Joetta Maui is another embroidery artist who was Brooklyn-based. She just moved up to Boston. There's a show up at Textile Art Center now that features her work. Let's see, who else? So many of them. It's really
those
hard
are, those
to
are
pick,
some good ones to start with. I think it's not a genre that gets talked about, at least enough outside of sort of the sort of very specific niche magazines that exist. I don't know if anybody even reads as much as they used to, which is sad. But those are good ones to start with. Well, I want to ask a little bit about the sort of Brooklyn versus Manhattan classes in a non-competitive way, but in a purely curious, is there a difference between the things people are making in both of those settings, or is it sort of the same general aesthetic you're seeing?
Yeah, I think there is definitely a big difference in what people are. I can't speak exactly to the aesthetic, but I can speak to the attitude towards textiles. It's a little bit more for the hobbyist in Manhattan rather than people who, you know, more designers, more students, people who are really serious about taking the next step or coming to Brooklyn, because we also have more equipment there. You know, we have larger looms, we have the screen printing facilities, we have the machine, the knitting machines. So that's a really important distinction, and we kept that from the very beginning. Although, you know, when we opened, we also started to notice we were competing with ourselves a little bit, having the same kinds of classes. There was no, if someone wanted to take weaving, they'll come to Brooklyn. They will do it, you know, if they want to do it that badly. So what we've started to do is offer more lower commitment, lower cost, more demonstrative classes in Manhattan, just to get people's appetite a little bit wet and, you know, also have the materials available for them to purchase. So that's been an important distinction to make between the two. It's not that I think people don't want to, but there's a busier vibe in Manhattan, obviously. You know, we all know that. There's people come to Brooklyn to live there because it feels good to get off the subway and breathe a little bit. So that really does happen there. You know, when people are coming in, they're always looking for materials, and you know, that it's very quick. They want to know the information. They don't want to stay and Manhattan chat piece. About what do you guys do? Start, you know. So that's a big difference, but it does end up dictating the classes, because then we'll choose very intro level classes to have in Manhattan just to get people's, you know, feet wet, and then they can come to Brooklyn if they want to take more advanced level classes.
That's great. I think it can seem a little intimidating to get into fiber sometimes. Totally. I think it seems like something where you have so much to learn, from terminology up to tools, it can be incredibly intimidating. Yep. So I'm glad you start there. Tell people a little bit about how membership and classes work in terms of specifics. Like, can people get a regular membership, or can they pay per class? How does that work?
Right now, it's really per class. We will be starting a membership program this summer that will continue on, hopefully, which would include a number of different levels so that you can kind of build your own membership. It doesn't have to be just one thing. You can, if what you're interested in is classes, you can, then your membership would get you discounts on it, or, you know, entrance to free events and things like that, versus maybe using, if you're purely, we just want to use the studio and you don't really care about taking the classes, or you want to be part of the CSA, the National Dye CSA, just different things like that. It gives you access in different ways and what really matters to you. So we'll be starting that in September. We'll kick it off.
That's great. And you also, in between our talking sections, what am I looking for? In between the break, After the Jump, the name of my own radio show, I can't think of the name of that. We were talking about the book that you guys just worked on. So tell us a little bit about that. That's a huge undertaking.
Yes,
I'm very excited for you guys.
Huge undertaking that if I knew beforehand, I would not have done it, I don't think. But we were approached in February of last year to help write a book within a series for Quarry Publishing Group. That was in a series of artist handbooks of how to set up your own thing at home. So they have one for ceramics and they have one for jewelry making, but they were going to do the textile one and they needed people to do that. So obviously we got information on all of those things. It was a great process. It just came out last week, so I'm really happy with the results. We are probably going to treat it as a textbook, really, within our own studio, because it really does touch on all the basics of a bunch of different media. Even though a lot of stuff is left out, we were forced to, you know, it was only 200 pages. We had to pull out a lot of textile history information and a lot of that. So it was a really interesting process to have to follow some. It wasn't a book we pitched. It was pitched to us. So we needed to follow what they wanted. And at first I was like, are you crazy? We can't fit every medium in a 200-page book. But we did it.
They'll find a way to do it. So what's the name of the book and where can people find it?
It's called The Textile Artist Studio Handbook. And you can find it on Amazon.com.
That's great. So what other big goals and projects do you have coming up for the rest of 2012?
We are doing a pilot program for teens this summer, which I'm really excited about because it's one demographic. It's pretty much the only one that we don't reach or have something appropriate for. So we're starting that, and it'll be from August 6th to 10th, and we're kind of doing an all-inclusive. They'll get a touch of weaving and a touch of printing and dyeing, but focusing on fashion. So that'll be really fun, and I'm happy to see where that goes. We do have the possibility of starting a textile production facility, which is very exciting, but we're just in the very beginning stages of figuring that out. So that would be growing our consulting, essentially, and being able to, allowing both independent and small fashion houses, but as well, we'd be happy to work with large companies too. But you know, if you wanted to do more of a limited edition kind of thing, then we would be able to help you start from the very beginning. What are the colors you want to work with? What's the fiber you want to work with? What is the structure of the weave? How is this going to be dyed? You know, so that's
exciting. That's going to be huge, especially in Brooklyn. I think there's such a need for production resources like that. And I think they're the success of sites like Spoonflower and things like that, where people have an outlet to even just make a sample of something is so huge. I'm really excited to see that sort of come to fruition. That would be great. So before you go, it's summer, and because this is a radio network where we talk about food, just not on this show so much, I would love to know what some of your favorite places to sort of hang out in the summer are, whether it's your favorite restaurant or some textile resources. What are the places you like to hang out when you're not working like crazy?
I try not to think about textiles when I'm not working.
I always wonder that. People who are in a very specific niche, like, do they actually go and do more of that when they're done? No, you're like, get me away
Everyone
from fabrics.
Everyone asks me that. They're like, well, are you still creative? I'm like, absolutely not. No way. I do own a loom, but it's not touched. My favorite places to go in the summer. I have been renting actually a house upstate, so I try and go up there on the weekend, but and one of our friends that we know through the Textile Arts Center has a fiber farm up there, so I'm a little bit down the road from
her. What's a fiber farm?
She raises Angora bunnies and sheep and things like that. So
if you could see the shop, I don't think there's a cuter profession than that.
Yeah,
it's gotta be the best.
And she's a designer, so she gets to sit there and spin her bunny fur and then crochet it into amazing bikinis and things like that.
That's kind of, although I'll have to say my brain totally jumped to that book about the people who make things with cat fur. It's a little, I know that Angora is in a different category, but I'm imagining all sorts of people growing animals for weird purposes.
But in Brooklyn, I wish Mission Dolores is right up the block from us, so that we spend a lot of time there. Little Neck is also the other direction from us, so get some oysters there. It's what's the word I'm looking for? A weakness of mine. Oysters. Oh. Love them. But there's a new beer garden that just opened in my neighborhood. I live in Sunset Park. So right by Greenwood Cemetery, there's a new beer garden there. So
that's fantastic. And for people who are listening who are just interested in niche specific, what are some of your favorite sort of either textile places to find textiles? It doesn't even have to be like just strict textiles, but great places to look for them.
There is a great place called Stella Dallas here in Williamsburg. I'm not going to remember the exact street,
later.
But it's right off right off the Lorimer stop. And that's a great place to go for sort of vintage fabrics. There's a vintage clothing store next door, but they have a fabrics and kind of notions and trims section as well. Pearl Soho is always a winner. Brooklyn General is amazing. So it depends on where, you know, what part of the city you're in, but there are new places popping up everywhere. You see them all the time. There's a yarn company up now on the Upper Manhattan. Like that. So
that's fantastic. Well, so for people who are listening who this is their first exposure to the idea of textile arts or learning something like this, what would you suggest the first thing they should do to get their foot in the door, whether it's a class or a book or some sort of process they should sort of start working with?
I would say, you know, you can come, if you want to come to visit us, then you can come and just take a tour. I mean, even just like poking around and seeing what kind of equipment we have. Usually people are drawn to one specific thing and have a specific aesthetic that they're after. A lot of people, especially in Brooklyn, are big blog followers, and that's a whole, you know, atmosphere that people are involved in and are aware of, you know, very specific local designers and artists that they're after. So they want to know more about and their processes as well, because a lot of them are very open about their processes, which is fantastic. So I would just getting familiar with equipment and what that means so that you can pick one thing and start. But we do offer a ton of different classes, whether that's just a 1-day workshop or a weekend intensive or a 4-week class. You can kind of choose based on what you're willing to commit, both monetarily and time-wise. So things like that, I think, are a great place to start. But books, too. I mean, going to Barnes & Noble or just browsing online for different things. Lena Corwin always has a great books out.
She's amazing.
So
it's, who doesn't love Lena Corwin?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, a lot of Jan Stutter and things like that are. I think just starting with those things and picking one thing and start, don't overwhelm yourself with trying to do too many things at one time. You can start, I would even, why not spinning? You know, that's mm-hmm. the very basis of everything that we're going to be doing, you know. So if you're working with roving, or if you wanted to, if you're dyeing it, or, you know, what are you going to do with it after then? But starting with one place and saying, waiting to see how that goes before you go to the next step.
That's great advice. Well, thank you for all the work you do and the amazing resource you provide to people.
Thank
here.
You for having
it's
me.
Incredible. Today. So you can visit the Textile Arts Center in person in Brooklyn and online. You can find the addresses for both at textilearts.com. Owen, thanks so much for talking
thank
with us today.
Guys.
And thanks for you for listening. We'll see you next Monday.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.